Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Well, today we're continuing our series entitled At the Movies. And if you're new to Next Level Church, and maybe this is your first time in church for a long while, you might be saying, why are we talking about movies? I want to hear about God. Well, let me tell you why we do a movie series. This is our fourth summer in a row where we highlight some movie clips in order to point us to God. And it's very strategic. The reason that we do this is because Next Level, we are a church that attempts to be, we want to speak two different languages. We want to speak spiritually. We want to be bilingual. And specifically what we mean by that is if you're a Christian, I want you to come to Next Level and I want to challenge your face off. Like, I want to step on your toes. I want you to grow. I don't want you sitting back apathetically and just saying, yeah, I went to church, check it off. I want you, if you're a Christian, I want you to fall madly in love with Jesus, so much so that you go out and you change the world. But we're spiritually bilingual, which means that we know that there are people who didn't grow up in church, who don't have a church background, who come, and it might be your friends or family, and we want this to be a safe place for you to invite them. And so we speak two languages. We're going to speak to Christians, but we're also going to speak to those that don't know where they're at in their faith. And this movie series is a safe series for you to invite your unchurched friends and family members to. They may not understand the Bible. They may have a lot of questions. They may not even know what they believe about God or the Bible. But everyone can relate to movies. And so we pop the popcorn. We show some highlights from some movie clips. And this is a series that I hope, if you're a Christian, will speak to you. But I really hope it is a series that you'll take advantage of and invite your friends and family that don't go to church. Today's film is a film that changed the game when it comes to movies. It is one of about five films that literally changed the landscape of how we watch movies. If you're a movie buff like I am, then you know some history about movies, and you know the films that literally changed how we view movies. There are a handful of them. The first two are Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz. Those films changed the way we watch movies. Specifically, they were two of the first movies to introduce color into the movie experience. And this is a fun fact for you. Gone with the Wind, if it is adjusted for inflation, is the number one movie-making movie in the history of the world. It's made more money than Titanic, Avatar, any Star Wars. It's made so much money if you adjust it for inflation. So Gone with the Wind changed the game. Wizard of Oz changed the game. And then in the late 70s, a movie came out. Jaws. Jaws came out and totally changed filmmaking. Specifically, what Jaws did is it introduced us to the summer movie season. It was the first time that there was a tentpole film that people built their schedules around and said, hey, we want to go to the movies. So if you're like me, and the only reason you like summertime is because it's the summer movie season, you have Jaws to thank for that. Like, Jaws changed the game. And now we have movies that wait till the summertime to come out because it's the summer movie season. It's literally a season in our culture. Another film that came out and changed the game was Star Wars. Some of you are Star Wars fans. And it changed so many things. In fact, they actually had to battle the studio because it changed the way that we view movies. Before George Lucas made Star Wars, whenever you would watch a movie, it would start off with about 5 minutes of credits. And then you would get into the film. Go back and watch some old classic Disney movies like Snow White or Robin Hood, and it takes forever. You're just watching credits. And if you've seen Star Wars, how does Star Wars start? With the big ship. Well, he actually got in trouble for that. They wanted to ban Star Wars because he was breaking code. Star Wars changed the way that we view movies. In the late 90s, a film came out that made us believe that dinosaurs could come back to life. Jurassic Park was a film that changed the game with their CGI and their special effects. And it's a movie that holds up really well. A lot of movies in the 90s don't hold up that well. But if you go back and watch Jurassic Park, like, the dinosaurs still look really legit. It's still a really good movie. And the film that we're going to feature today is one of those movies. It's a tentpole movie that was so impactful to our society and to our culture that many movies try to copy what it did. The movie came out in 1999. It is a sci-fi action movie. And the movie is entitled The Matrix. Anyone seen The Matrix? Okay, a few of you fans of The Matrix. The Matrix, a little history about The Matrix. The Matrix was a little film that it couldn't find a star. It originally wanted Will Smith, and he rejected The Matrix. It was too weird for him. He didn't want to do The Matrix. And so they went through actors. Brad Pitt didn't want to do it. Just left and right, they got rejected. And they finally stumbled upon Keanu Reeves to play the part of Neo. And The Matrix came out with not a lot of fanfare, but it ended up being such a phenomenal film that even though it didn't open huge compared to today's standards, it cost $63 million and went on to make $463 $1 million. That's a lot of money. Okay? So The Matrix like impacted culture. It was a phenomenal film. And a few things about The Matrix. Number one, I know that some of you, after we highlight a movie, you like to go watch the film afterwards. And The Matrix is rated R. It is not a Christian film. So don't gather the young ones with you and watch it with your kids, okay? This is a R-rated means 17 and above. So respect the ratings and just know that when you go into this film. Another thing I want to highlight, though, is that this is not a Christian film, but the makers of it were incredibly spiritual. And even though this isn't a Christian film, they intentionally put things into the movie that highlight who Jesus is and the idea of having a Messiah. If you haven't seen the film, or maybe it's been a while since you've seen it, let me give you a quick little recap. The story of The Matrix starts off with a guy by the name of Neo, who's played by Keanu Reeves, and Neo is bored with life. He's bored with his job. He's bored with just everything. He feels like he is called to something so much greater than just working a 9-to-5 job. I don't know if you can relate to that, but that's a powerful idea, that you're just existing through life, and yet you feel like inside there's something that you're called to that is so much greater. And so at nighttime, he is a computer hacker to make some extra money, and during the day, he works at a computer software company, and he's just existing, but he keeps feeling like he's called, he's destined for something great. And that's where our first scene of the film picks up. Check this out.
Who is it?
It's Troy.
Yeah. You're 2 hours late.
I know. It's her fault.
You got the money?
$2,000.
Hold up.
Hallelujah. You're my savior, man. My own personal Jesus Christ.
You get caught using that.
Yeah, I know. This never happened. You don't exist.
Right.
Something wrong, man? You look a little whiter than usual.
My computer, it... You ever have that feeling where you're not sure if you're awake or still dreaming?
All the time. It's called mescaline. It's the only way to fly. Hey, look, it just sounds to me like, you know, you need to unplug, man. You know, get some R&R. Hey, what do you think, Deshore? Should we take him with us?
Definitely.
I can't. I have work tomorrow.
Come on. It'll be fun. I promise.
Yeah. Sure. I'll go.
So Neo follows the white rabbit, and the creators of this film are not Christians. They were brothers who were raised by an atheist dad, a very passionate atheist dad. Their mom had a Catholic background but wasn't practicing. And I don't know what inspired them to put so many Jesus comparisons into their film, but when they sat down to write The Matrix, it is very clear from even the opening scenes that Neo is supposed to be a Messiah-like character. If you remember from the dialogue that he had with the computer guy that he was giving the disc to, he says, "You're my own personal Jesus Christ." The very first words to describe who Neo is as a Jesus-type figure. And this theme is carried throughout the film. In fact, Neo follows the White Rabbit to a nightclub, and he meets a female by the name of Trinity. Now, if you're in the Christian circles, you know that Trinity is important to us, that the Trinity includes the Godhead, which is the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, three separate persons of God, but we worship one God. They're all together. And in the film, Neo represents Jesus, who is the Messiah figure. Trinity represents the Holy Spirit, who is the voice or the conscience. And she leads him to meet someone by the name of Morpheus. And in the film, Morpheus is described as a father figure. And so you have the picture of the Trinity within the film of The Matrix. Now, Neo follows Trinity to go meet Morpheus and to try to figure out what this Matrix is all about. And this next scene is one of the most iconic scenes in movie history. If you love movies, if you watch like the Academy Awards and they ever show like a highlight reel of the biggest movies of all time, they almost always include this scene from The Matrix. They show the scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones with the boulder rolling. That's like an iconic scene. E.T. when he sticks out his finger and touches Elliot's finger, that's an iconic scene. Jaws coming up out of the water is iconic. And almost always they include this scene from The Matrix. Check it out.
This is it. Let me give you one piece of advice. Be honest. He knows more than you can imagine.
At last. Welcome, Neo. As you no doubt have guessed, I am Morpheus.
It's an honor to meet you.
No. The honor is mine. Please, come, sit. I imagine that right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole,
You could say that.
I can see it in your eyes. You have the look of a man who accepts what he sees because he is expecting to wake up. Ironically, this is not far from the truth. Do you believe in fate, Neo?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't like the idea that I'm not in control of my life.
I know exactly what you mean. Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Matrix.
Do you want to know what it is? The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window, or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage. Born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
So Morpheus meets with Neo, and he tells him that the world that he's living in is not the real world, that he is blinded. And this is an allegory to what it means to live in our world, that in our world, according to Christian tradition and Christian faith, that we are all born into this world with eyes to see and the ability to experience, but what we see in the world is not what's really going on. That we all have these spiritual blinders over us. That the world that we live in is not the real world. That there's something more going on. And that we have this darkness that is over our eyes. And it sheds us from seeing the truth. And what does Morpheus offer to Neo? He offers him the truth. And maybe you'll remember something that Jesus taught. Jesus taught that you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Morpheus is telling Neo that he is attached to this thing called the Matrix. And if you've seen the film, then you know what's going on here, but they explain it, for those of us that haven't seen it, that the Matrix is artificial intelligence, that humans created AI at some point in the world, and AI turned on them, and a war broke out between humans and the artificial intelligence, and humans now are down underground because the whole earth has been scorched and destroyed, and their whole purpose of being human is to find other humans who are attached to the Matrix and to set them free. The following scene is this perfect illustration of what we believe Christians, what happens to us spiritually. Neo is found in the Matrix, and he's a grown adult, but he's in this pod, and it is almost like he is born again. And they drain the pod, and he comes shooting down a slide, and they unattach him from the Matrix. And when he wakes up in the real world, he is shocked. He can't believe what the world is really like. And he uses this amazing phrase. He looks up at Morpheus and he says, "Why do my eyes hurt?" And Morpheus looks at him and says, "Because you've never used them before." It is this idea in the spiritual world for us that are Christians that if you became a Christian later in life, when once you receive Jesus into you, he opens your eyes spiritually. And it is almost painful. It's like you start to see things that are differently than the way that you used to view the world. And you see everything. It completely changes. And it's like, this almost hurts. Like, it would be easier to go back to the way that I used to view the world. Now I'm seeing things through God's lens. And sometimes it's almost painful. Why? Because you've never used your real eyes. That God, a relationship with Jesus, literally opened your eyes spiritually. Well, Neo comes into the real world, and this is where the film just gets cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. It is weird. If you've not seen the film, you might be like me. I went in 1999. I was a freshman in college, and my brother told me that The Matrix was a game changer of a movie. The exact line that he said is, he said, "It's the next Terminator 2. Now, I love Terminator 2. I thought it was an iconic movie, and so I was like, I'm going to go see this film if it's really that good. And I went to the movie by myself. Anyone else like going to movies by yourself? All the introverts unite. Look, there's a lot of people who hate going to a movie by yourself. You think it's weird. It's not weird. It's pitch black dark and you don't talk. Like, it's AC. It's a way to get away from the world. Go to the movies by yourself. It'll change who you are. So I went to The Matrix by myself, and I'm sitting there watching the film, and after he takes the red pill, the film gets so weird that I literally stood up at the matinee showing. I was one of the few people in the theater. I stood up and I walked towards the exit, and I was like, this is so weird. I'm out of here. I'm not going to sit through this. But then when I got to the exit, I thought, my brother told me it was going to get good. So like, I've already paid for it. Let me just endure this weirdness and maybe the film will get good. And if you haven't seen it, and you end up watching it, endure this weird part, because it's really out there. It is really sci-fi. If you're not into sci-fi, it's like over-the-top sci-fi. It's weird. But in this is something that I think gets lost by a lot of people who have seen The Matrix. That in the sci-fi and in the weirdness is this theme that the reason they wanted to set Neo free is because he is the one. He is a messiah-like figure that is going to come and give all the rest of humanity freedom. In this next clip, Morpheus talks to Neo and unveils this prophecy that tells exactly who he thinks Neo is. Check this out.
When the Matrix was first built, there was a man born inside who had the ability to change whatever he wanted, to remake the Matrix as he saw fit. It was he who freed the first of us, taught us the truth. As long as the Matrix exists, the human race will never be free. After he died, the Oracle prophesied his return, and that his coming would hail the destruction of the Matrix, end the war, bring freedom to our people. That is why there are those of us who have spent our entire lives searching the Matrix, looking for him. I did what I did because I believe that search is over.
So in that scene, Morpheus unveils that he believes that Neo is the one. He is a messiah-like figure. Now, this is where some of the parallels between Neo and Jesus stop, because Jesus never doubted whether or not he was the one. He knew he was called by God to set people free, but Neo doubts it. He sees himself as just a man, and this is where I think the most significant spiritual theme of the whole film takes place. There are so many allegories and so many spiritual illustrations in The Matrix, but the one that captures me the most is this wrestling with doubt and faith. That throughout the whole rest of the film, there are those who do not believe that Neo is the one, and they doubt it and they question it. And then there are those who believe that he is the one. And even when Neo doesn't do what they think this Messiah, what they think the one should do, there are some characters in the film who say, I still believe. I'm not going to be shaken in my faith in who you are. And there are others who say, no, there's no way he's the one. He failed this test. He didn't meet our expectations. And throughout the whole rest of the movie, there's just this conflict, this tension between is Neo the one or is he not the one? And in our following clip is a scene where Neo is doubting that he is the one, but he's starting to believe that there's something different in him. And there's some key themes, some key ideas in this that I want you to listen carefully to their dialogue. Check this out.
Morpheus, you are more than a leader to us. You are a father. We'll miss you always.
I don't believe this is happening.
Neo, this has to be done.
Does it? I don't know. This can't be just coincidence. It can't be.
What are you talking about?
The Oracle. She told me this would happen. She told me that I would have to make a choice.
What choice? What are you doing?
I'm going in.
No, you're not.
I have to.
Neo, Morpheus sacrificed himself so that we could get you out. There is no way that you're going back in.
Morpheus did what he did because he believed that I'm something I'm not.
What?
I'm not the one, Trinity. The Oracle hit me with that too.
No, you have to be.
I'm sorry, I'm not. I'm just another guy.
No, Neo, that's not true. It can't be true.
Why?
Neo, this is Loco. They've got Morpheus in a military-controlled building. Even if you somehow got inside, those are agents holding him. Three of them. I want Morpheus back too, but what you're talking about is suicide.
I know that's what it looks like, but it's not. I can't explain to you why it's not. Morpheus believed something, and he was ready to give his life for what he believed. I understand that now. That's why I have to go.
Why?
Because I believe in something.
What?
I believe I can bring him back.
I just want to keep watching. Like, it's so good. And they never said the word faith in that clip. But if you don't hear the essence of faith, you zoned out. That they talk about believing in something, that Morpheus believed that Neo is the one, and Neo is starting to believe in something, and that's all faith is. Faith is believing in something, even though you don't know the outcome, even though you can't predict the future, you believe in something strongly, so strongly that you're willing to give your life for it. The idea of faith is strong in this, but there's this tension because not everyone believes that Neo is the one, and he doesn't even believe it. And this sets up our final clip for the day. I've tried to keep out a lot of the action scenes from The Matrix because I know not everyone loves action and some people are sensitive to that. But I want to show one scene that has a little bit of action in it. And I want to explain to you that what you're about to see is a part of The Matrix. So it is a computer program. And it looks real, but the buildings that are destroyed and things that happen, it's all computer. It's not real buildings being destroyed. And after we see a quick little bit of action, I want you to listen carefully to the dialogue that Morpheus has with Neo because it's so important for our talk for the day. Check this out.
Believe it now, Trinity?
Morpheus. The Oracle. She told me.
She told you exactly what you needed to hear. That's all. Neo, sooner or later you're going to realize, just as I did, there's a difference between knowing the path and walking.
That'll preach right there. There's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path. And a lot of people have some version of faith in God that they say, I believe that God exists, and so maybe I'll go to church every once in a while, and maybe I might say a prayer at dinner time, and I believe that he exists, but there's something different about actually knowing that God exists and walking towards God. And in the film, what really changes Neo's life is he doesn't just kind of believe intellectually. He starts to walk and put his faith in action. And I don't know about you. I don't know how you deal with your faith. But I want to tell you that I'm a person of great faith. Like, I really believe in God. I really believe in the stories of the Bible. I really believe in Jesus. But yet, so often in this world, my circumstances cause me to doubt my faith in God. And there's so often when I'm like, yeah, I believe in God and I'll raise my hand and I'll sing towards him. But then Monday through Friday, my world is rocked and I'm like, come on, God, is this real? Like, are you really existing? Are you really there? Are you really the one, or is there going to be another one? Every time I get news of another person, someone I care about that's had a miscarriage, it's like, come on, God, can't you just reach out and protect us from that? Every time there's a shooting in our country and more lives are taken, I'm like, come on, God, we are dying. We are killing ourselves. Can't you just break into our world and fix some things? Are you really there? And I think so often in the Christian world, we think that if you have faith in God, it means that your life will be perfect and there won't be any doubt, that there won't be any question. And I actually believe that Jesus is big enough to allow us to bring our doubt to him. And I think that if you will bring your doubt to who Jesus is, he will do something. He will change you. But it takes some faith. And faith isn't just knowing about Jesus. It's literally walking to him and bringing him your life. Now, I want to show you this in our text for today. Our text comes from a guy by the name of Mark. And Mark was not one of Jesus' disciples, but most likely he was in the crowd. He was one of the friends of Jesus' disciples. And most people believe that Mark was the first person to write about Jesus' life and story, and that the other books that talk about Jesus all reference Mark's because he was the first one. Now, something that's interesting about Mark is that Mark's whole goal is to get to the crucifixion of Jesus and then to the resurrection. And so Mark's is the shortest one of the Gospels. We call the first four books of the New Testament the Gospel. It's a word that literally means good news, and it's because it tells us about Jesus, that he came to set us free. And Mark is really quickly. He just wants to get to the crucifixion. He wants to get to the resurrection. But every once in a while, he takes a little time out to let us know who Jesus was. And in this section, it comes right after this amazing miracle happened where Jesus takes three of his best friends up on top of a mountain, and they're in the presence of God. They experience God on the mountaintop. If you've been in church world a long time, if you're spiritual, you know that that is an allegory for our life, that up on the mountaintop, you experience Jesus. But then you walk down into the valley, and it's like, God, where are you? And Jesus leaves the mountaintop, and he walks in to deal with some humans, and this is the circumstances that he walks into. Mark 9, 14 through 15. It says, when they came to the other disciples, that is Jesus and the three guys that were with him, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. Now, there's a couple things that are happening here, that there are some religious leaders, some Pharisees, that really know the Bible and really know about God, and they are arguing with Jesus' disciples, the guys he handpicked to follow him, and they're having this argument. And in the midst of their argument, Jesus walks up, and it says that they stop in wonder. Now, I just want to speak into this just for a second, because I think that for those of you that have been Christians for a really long time, it's easy to lose your wonder of God. It's so easy that after it's not new to you anymore, to just kind of go to church and check it off and just kind of say, yeah, we just do it. We sing some songs, and yeah, we hear a sermon, and that's just life. And we lose this awe. We lose this wonder. And I think if you want God to do something in your life, if you want to encounter the presence of God, there needs to be some awe and wonder. You need to come expecting to say, the God of the universe can speak into my mess and can say something. He can change me. He can heal me. But I can't just come casually. I can't just say, oh, ho-hum, this is just another church service. This is just another prayer. This is just another opportunity to read the Bible. You've got to come with some awe and some wonder, with some expectation. And the people had no idea what Jesus was about to do. They're arguing with themselves, but they stop for a second and they're in wonder. And this guy is special. This is worth giving our honor and attention to. And look what happens next. This is Jesus talking. He says, what are you arguing with them about? A man in the crowd answered, teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. Now, let's just take a quick time out right here. Okay, this is weird, all right? We need to acknowledge the weirdness of this. In our day and age, we don't have a lot of people saying, hey, my son is possessed by a demon. And if someone brought to me a son that was possessed by a demon, I'm probably going to run. Like, I'm not going to sit around and just kind of hang out and watch what's happening. And you might be judging me and saying, no, you're a pastor. You know, you better call the Ghostbusters. I'm out of here if there's a possessed kid in my presence. Like, this is a little weird. This is a little scary stuff. But in their day and age, it must have been way more natural because they have a possessed kid in their presence and they decide to argue about it. Now, I think this is incredibly significant for us because the father says that he brought his son to meet Jesus, but Jesus wasn't available, so the next best thing was to bring the son to his followers. Now, how often do people in our culture say, I don't really believe in God, but I'm hurting right now so much, I just need to find him. So let me bring my problems, let me bring my issues to one of his followers. If you're a Christian, you're one of the followers, and the world is looking, it is watching, and it's just dying to know that there is some hope, that we're not alone. But so often, when people bring their mess to us, we're so busy fighting with one another that we have our backs towards the world. Did you notice what happened in this? The disciples and the religious leaders, they're fighting with one another. And here's a kid that is possessed by a demon, and the dad is just crying out, I just wanted to bring him to Jesus. Can somebody help him? No, we don't really care about you. We'd rather fight about our theological differences. We'd rather fight about the differences of church services and our preferences. And we'd rather argue with one another than actually turn around and help someone that is in need. Even if Next Level Church is not your church, would you please just embrace this? There is a world that is dying and desperately needs Jesus. And when we fight with one another, it is as if we are sticking the middle finger up to a broken world and saying, we don't care about you. We'd rather argue with one another than actually deal with some people's problems. And the disciples and the Pharisees, they're wrestling with one another, they're arguing. And there's this guy who's like hurting, and he's like, here's my boy, I just want him healed. And Jesus speaks into this in the very next section. He says, Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered. It has often thrown him into a fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. Now, I don't know about you, but I can relate to this dad. This is a dad that I believe has a lot of faith. That it doesn't tell us that he did this, but I'm assuming that he's prayed lots of times. And I'm assuming that he's brought his son to the church before. And I'm assuming that his son's been on a prayer list at church and that he's reached out on Facebook and said, hey, pray for my boy. He's possessed by a demon, threw himself in a fire again. We need your prayers. Hashtag prayer works. Like, I'm sure he's reached out trying to get some help. I don't know, though, if you've been a Christian for very long, but let me tell you what happens. When you're a Christian for very long, there's going to become a circumstance where life hits you, and it is so strong that you just start to wonder, God, do you really exist? And this guy has some faith. He has enough faith to get up out of his house and bring his son to Jesus, but he's questioning. And why is he questioning? Because his whole boy's life, he's seen him suffer. Specifically, he's seen him be thrown into fires and thrown into water to die. And can you imagine as a parent being helpless and trying to help your kid and just saying, I can't do anything for you? And some of you struggle with your faith because you've been in a circumstance that you just can't fix. And it is above your pay grade. It has rocked your world. And it's like, God, I want her to love me, but she left and she won't give me another chance. God, will you just heal this family member? Would you just get rid of cancer? I believe that you can do it, but like, would you just please help me in this? God, we're struggling financially. We need you. Like, we're not asking to be millionaires, but would you just hear our prayer, God? We are hurting and we need you to do something. And this man brings all these years of hurt and doubt, and he brings it to Jesus, and he says, Jesus, if you can do something, would you help my boy? And look at what Jesus says. This is so important. Jesus says, if you can? Well, see, everything is possible for the one who believes. I don't think that Jesus' tone was rebuking this father. I think he was just calling into question, like, hey, buddy, I see that you have a lot of faith because you traveled a distance to get here, but now you're asking me if I can? Well, let me tell you how faith works, that when you believe in something, anything is possible. Let's go back to the Matrix. What did Morpheus say to Neo in the film? He says there's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path. And so often, our faith stops with actually walking. If you want to experience a miracle in your life, it's not just believing that God exists and that God can do something and may do something. And yeah, sure, if God wants to interact in my life, he can do it. But I'm just going to sit back and watch what happens. That's not faith. Faith is actually walking towards God, even in the midst of circumstances that tell you he does not exist. And faith is believing that there's something bigger out there and holding on to Jesus, even in moments where you just say, I don't even know if you're real right now, but you're all I have. You're all I have to hold on to. This world is so difficult. Like, I can't do this on my own. So, God, here is my problem. And if you can do something, would you just fix this? I think that God is big enough to handle our doubts. But so often, our doubts stop us from actually coming into the presence of Jesus. This is what happens next in the text. And I think that this is one of the most important prayers in the whole history of the world. Immediately, the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. Have you ever been there? Have you ever said, yeah, God, I do believe, but I'm doubting right now. God, I believe that you're good, and I've heard about the stories of how you change other people, but I'm struggling right now to believe if you're good in my life. And God, I know that you exist, and I believe in you. I gave my heart to you, but right now in this moment, I need you to deliver me. I need you to do something. I believe, but God, I got a lot of doubt. And I think that if you don't struggle with doubt, it is calling into question how deep your faith is in God. Because a deep faith in God actually means that you take steps towards him and you walk towards him. And when you walk towards him, sometimes you're going to be disappointed. And a deep faith in God says, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to bust through this. I'm going to keep walking. Even though when life is pointing to that God may not be real and God may not exist, I'm going to keep pushing through this. That's what faith is. And if you never doubt your faith, it's probably because you don't have much faith to begin with. I'm convinced that faith is not the absence of doubt, but the power of perseverance. Faith is not saying that I'm never going to doubt God, I'm never going to not believe in him, I'm never going to question what he does. I'm going to have doubts as a person of faith, but I'm going to persevere because it's in the perseverance that you experience the power of God. So let me just ask you, what is the world doing to your faith? I know you're here today, and so you have some faith in God. But if you stop walking towards him, like, what are the limits to your faith? For some of you, you're here and you listen to the sermon and you endure the music, but like, taking a step of faith might be actually raising your hands. And why do we do this? Well, if you were in a stick-up, if someone had a gun to you, what would you do? I surrender. My hands are up. Like, I have nothing between me and you. Like, I'm showing you, I'm not battling against you. And so when we worship here at Next Level, we raise our hands. It doesn't mean we're more spiritual. It doesn't mean that we don't have doubt. It doesn't mean that we don't have problems. But it's simply a sign to God to say, hey, God, there is nothing between me and you. I surrender to you. And for some of you, you're scared to death to do that. Well, this is a step of faith. For some of you, you struggle with the idea of reading the Bible. And you might be like my kids. Every morning, our church provides these devotions that you can do as a family. And every morning at breakfast, I do these devotions with my kids. And I thought they were going amazing. But this past week on Monday, as I said, all right, guys, it's time to open the Bible. My daughter says, do we have to? It is just so boring. And I like look to her twin brother, hoping he's going to like come to my aid. And I'm like, Hayden, what do you think? Yeah, Dad, it is so boring. Do we have to read the Bible? Yeah, it can be a little bit boring, but you know what faith is? Faith is enduring some of the boredom. It's getting past it. It's saying, yeah, this is difficult. It's not as easy as watching TV, but I want to take a step because I believe there's power in your words. And even when I don't feel like it, I'm going to take a step. Some of you struggle with prayer. And the only prayers you pray are these like boxed canned prayers that maybe you do before dinner. But like the idea of actually going to God, that's a struggle for you. Well, guess what that is? That is a walk of faith, of stepping and saying, God, I don't even know what to say. But did you catch the prayer of this dad? It wasn't a rehearsed prayer. He said, I believe, but I need you to help me in my unbelief. Like, God doesn't want some fake thing that you've rehearsed. He wants your heart. He wants your genuine heart where you just bring the mess to him and say, God, this is me. God, I'm struggling. But I believe. Today, to close, what I want to do is I want to pray over you. I know not everyone is struggling with faith, and maybe some of you have way deeper faith even than I do, or maybe you've never gone through a difficult circumstance. But for those of you who can relate to this dad who's gone through something difficult, who is asking God to work, who has gone through years of unanswered prayers, and yet you're standing at the feet of Jesus asking him to do something, I want to specifically pray for you. And what we're going to do in just a second is I'm going to pray over you, and then Levi is going to come up, and he's going to do a song that is a powerful song. It's a song that impacted me in college. And it's a song that I want you to listen to the words. This isn't a song that we're going to sing. It's a song that's going to be sung over us. But I want you to pay attention to the words, specifically the words of faith and what it means in our lives. So if you would just close your eyes and bow your heads, I want to pray over you. If you're here today and you would say that you can relate to the dad, that you have some doubt, but you do believe in God, that your circumstances have been so rough that right now you're struggling, that you're here, you're not giving up on God, but you're just kind of doubting, you're struggling. If you're here today and you would say, that's me, would you just raise your hand? No one's looking. We're not trying to embarrass you. My hand's up, just so you know. Like, what I want to do is I just want to pray for you. If your hand's up, you can put it down. If you haven't raised your hand yet, but you want me to pray for you, you can slip it up real quick. I just want to pray for those that are hurting. And God, we just come before you right now, and this is a room filled of people that have some type of faith. that we're here today because we want to at least know that you're real. And God, for those that need a miracle, would you just speak into their life? Would you give them enough faith to keep walking towards you? God, would you give them strength to walk even when they don't feel like it? God, would you put the right people in their life to encourage them? This week, God, would you give us some answers? God, for those of us that have allowed our doubt to push us away from you, this week, God, would you put some Bible verses in our life? Would you give us discipline to dive into the Bible? Would you give us discipline to pray? Would you give us discipline to ask someone for help? God, would you help us to be a people of deep faith, even in the midst of doubt? We thank you for what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.